Welcome to Perfectly Sane Show, episode 484. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
I just want to say this definitively right now. Water does not constitute a drink. It is not a drink.
I mean, technically, it is a drink.
No, you consume it by the act of drinking, but in itself, when you're like, do you want a drink? Water. Water's not a drink.
Sorry. You can go to a bar and order. You can go to a bar and get water.
It's free. You know, bars sell drinks.
You can get it.
They give you the water because it's not a drink. It's like an accessory.
What if you are a designated driver?
You can have a Coke, which is a drink.
Oh, okay. So we're saying something with some flavor.
Does it count if it's a sparkling water that is lemon-lime flavored? I don't know if
that's kind of skirting. That's skirting the edges there. You're kind of like, I want this to be a drink, but also not a drink at the same time.
Which is exactly why I started doing sparkling water, because you get a little flavor to it, but you still kind of get water, which means there's really nothing to it but water.
And you almost always have to pay for that if you're out.
Okay, just to be fair, I'm in my house, not out, so we're not going to use that as a criteria. I'm not going to say I'm not going to go
well,
to a bar and
maybe,
order water.
Maybe when you're at home, it counts as a drink because you like pay for your water bill.
Well, the
water's not free.
But if Earl is drinking sparkling water,
right?
He's paying for it anyway, unless he has like a machine that can make sparkling water. They do exist, right? Like
they
those
do.
soda machines,
the Soda Stream things. Yeah.
Yes,
we have.
Which I do want to get for seltzer and stuff like that. So,
well, Earl is here.
Why are my intros always so long? I don't understand.
Jeff is here as well.
Hi.
Jeff, what are you drinking? Does it constitute a drink?
Not according to Tony. It's a Bud.
Oh God, it's milk. Oh no. That's a drink. It's just not beer. That's all.
Wait, what is he drinking?
A Bud Light.
I don't know, that's almost
water.
At that point, I'd rather drink water, yeah.
You might as well.
I mean, he's just not a Corona, I guess. And no, that's just a bad joke. There's way too many coronavirus jokes on the interwebs as it is.
I was going to go there.
I was like, I prefer Corona to Bud Light, but I get it now.
Oh, no. I mean, like, if maybe we'll have a beer cast at some point. I mean, I think Tony and I are the closest. I mean, we're the craft beer drinkers. I have a very particular taste. I cannot do Bud or Corona or Heineken. Can't do any of that anymore. I mean, I guess it's like you go out and it's like a dive bar and they have all your data's options.
Right.
Or like it's at the end of the night and I've already had like six beers. It's like at that point, it's all kind of, like it doesn't all taste the same. But I mean, right. It's cheaper.
At that point, your taste buds are burnt.
But I think my palate's been like altered by this point. So if I'm drinking something like that, I don't taste anything at all. Like it might as well just be water.
and that's what I mean. It's not even that it tastes bad. It doesn't taste like anything.
That's right. Like, oh, yeah. It's just bubbly water.
Jeff, I mean, I don't care how much.
What's that?
How does the Bud Light taste?
It tastes like a Bud Light. It's fine.
I don't care.
It tastes like a Bud Light.
Put in it, so it still does not taste like any. So.
Since video games stopped existing in the year 2020, we've decided to go a little more tactile and manual, analog, I guess.
Oh, baby.
With board games. We have a lot on here, so we are not going to cover all the games that we listed here. We will do another one of these at some point, but
just for clarity's sake, and I probably should have asked this before we started recording this, or when we came up with this, like we're just talking board games this week, right? No tabletops.
No D&D, nothing like that.
Okay, you know. Okay. Well, I mean that there's one that I have on here that is it's a hybrid of that almost, but
yeah, I have one of those too. So yeah. I think those are fair game.
Okay, so yes, I have to add off of my list, so we'll do it next time.
Okay,
anything that involves like the player having to like do most of the work to create the world,
Right.
Yeah. So
and it's a split one. But the two I have, like the world is created. You are just running. You are doing like a preordained adventure in those.
Right.
In that. So, yeah, it's not. It is a role playing game of sorts, but it is not D&D. That type of stuff. I don't know. I am interested in the first game that Jeff put down on his list, though.
That we've all talked about.
Yeah, that I wanted to talk about. I think I'm the only one that hasn't played it. Yeah. Splendor. So you guys want to tell me what that is?
Jeff, go.
It is. I mean, just, you know, bird's eye view. I think it's a great game, and I think it's one that will like become a classic. But the general idea is you're using chips, like different colored chips, to buy cards, and some of those cards have points on them, and you're trying to reach a score of 15. First player to 15 points wins. It's like, yeah, there's a little more nuance to it than that, but like it's a very simple game. But, you know, there's like a level of strategy to it. Like, so a beginner could play, like, you will get the game within like 5 minutes of playing it, basically. And you could play with someone who's like played a ton of it. And you might even do well. But, like, I've noticed that, you know, out of my group of friends, there is somebody who tends to win a lot. So that leads me to believe that, you know, strategy is a bigger factor than you might think. But yeah, I mean, anyone else want to?
There is strategy.
Am I off on this?
There's strategy to it. Well, no, I mean, like, I get it. Like, I played it a few weeks ago for the first time, and there is, like, everybody has their own different strategy, because there are some people who just kind of go ham, and they just kind of go for it at the start. I was more of the build type. I'm the type of person who's going to build up, because essentially how it works is you have three rows of cards, and based off the rows, like, the first row is pretty, I mean, none of it's super easy to buy, but like the first row is simpler, the second row you need more resources, and then the third one you really have to save up for. And the best way to kind of do that, again, it depends on your strategy, is that you can buy cards, and those cards kind of act as permanent, like it's like a gem resource game. So you can buy cards that will always generate that colored gem for you no matter what. Instead of, like, how turns work, when you get your turn, you can either pick up three gems of three different colors. Two gems of one color, so it says four or more. You can pick up what is called a wild card or like a gold gem, and you can only pick up one of those, but you can use that then to save take any card off the table.
Like reserve but then, a card.
Yeah, and then I think you can reserve up to three at a time. Yeah. And then finally, you can turn in your chips, your gems, or whatever to buy cards. So, like, and I think there's, what, five different types of gems?
So, yeah.
So yeah, so like my strategy was to kind of focus on the lower level ones, which are just kind of like, oh, you know, like you buy, like it's like it'll be like two diamonds and two Amherst or whatever. So you need four chips and you just kind of go around. But then it might give you a permanent like ruby. And my early strategy was to kind of do that and buy up a bunch of them. And then by the end, like mid game, you have enough that you don't necessarily need to buy chips. You can just kind of take stuff off the table because you have enough of those cards generating gems for you.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah. So you have the different colored chips, right, Chris? And you're spending those to buy these cards. Well, every card you buy has a color on it, and it acts as like a permanent chip. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
Let's say a card costs three red gems or whatever, and you have two red chips, and you have a red card. Well, then you could buy it, and you would only have to use those two chips to buy it. So you're building up an arsenal as it goes on of permanent. Okay. And you know, like he said, there's three rows. As you get into the higher rows, like it's going to cost way more to buy the card. But those cards up there might have 6-7 points on them. You know what I mean? As opposed to the bottom row, a lot of the cards on the bottom row have no points on them.
Yeah, they have no points on them. And like Jeff said, the ultimate goal is to get 15 points. It doesn't matter how you get 15 points. Whoever gets 15 points first. Actually, I think it's weird because it's whoever gets 15 points first, but there's a system where somebody, like, you can get 15 points around and somehow not end up with the highest score. And then there's
I think you get to finish your round. Yeah, I think you get to finish your round, but if someone has like a 17 versus a 15, I think the 17 would.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the 17 would win, but I mean, like, at that point, you would think that, oh, so you'd go around the table one more time. Okay. And then the other thing that you kind of get is there are royalty cards, or I forget what they're called, the fishery. And those cards aren't in play, but once you kind of complete the objective, which might be like having three red, three blues, three blacks, you automatically get that. And it's like a card that it gives you gem, but it also kind of, it's just like the standard card that you get for just completing this mini objective. So that's also something to keep in mind when playing the game.
Wait, so, what? What card? What are you talking about?
Like, there's like the Baron, the King. You don't.
Oh, the tiles.
Yeah, the character cards. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So above the whole game will sit like some tiles that, if you have enough permanent cards, like permanent colors to buy that tile, mm-hmm. you just have to call it out. Like, so you could not notice it. And someone else could call it out. Like, you could have it for two rounds. And you just didn't. You weren't paying attention to the tiles up top. It's like a bonus, right. You know.
And do you get the, like, once you buy it, is it yours?
Or yes.
Can somebody else buy it? Like,
so someone else could build up after you, and they've been paying attention to that, and just buy it. And
okay.
But and they get my offer for you. I think is what you're asking.
Well, yeah, because like we'll probably talk about Catan because I think Tony has it on his list.
Yeah, we're totally talking about Catan.
And there are cards you can buy, or there are objectives you can complete, like getting the longest road or the biggest army. But those can actually be taken from you if like another player builds a longer road or breaks your road somehow. Yeah,
these are just like bonus things, kind of okay. like, you know, side thing, but like
that you can purchase.
And yeah, yours.
Got it.
Yeah, but like, so I've actually had games where I was playing against this guy I said that always wins, my friend Eric. And he'll like, it'll be near the end, and you'll have like 13 points. You're within like, you know, reach, like probably within this hand, you might win the game, right? And he'll be sitting there with like 7 points, and all of a sudden he'll be like, and I'm buying these two tiles, and they'll like win the game. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's, again, if you plan early enough, that's my strategy. But again, the flip side to that, like I mentioned with the gold coins, is you can dig somebody over. Like, you can kind of, if you understand
yeah, you see what they're strategy, building towards, you reserve a card that you
can just buy, take it off yeah. the table. You don't have to buy it at that time. You mm-hmm. just take it off the table. You can only have three at a time, so you can't just hoard them. But it's like, oh, I'm going to take this off the table, and then that person's kind of screwed, because you can also only hold 10. At the end of your turn, you can only have 10 gems in hand. Like, say somebody was saving up 7 whites, and you took off a card that they need that had 7 whites. They're kind of screwed if something else comes out. Like, if something comes out,
they have nothing to buy with their white
yeah.
You can only have like 10 of the chips, though. It's not yeah. like any your permanent cards don't count towards that.
Yeah.
You can only have, you know, 10 chips basically at a time.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to throw like too many. Like, we kind of basically told you everything, but it's like, for me, it's hard to listen to someone explain a board game. And
I think that's always the case. And I mean, this is something we could talk about. It's like, so I have friends, I have playing board games, but like, we'll spend an hour setting up the board game and reading all of the rules. And then the game starts and nobody remembers the rules. So you're just ripping through the book anyhow. Like, I understand knowing the basics, but like, sometimes you get really in the weeds.
Yeah. I like games that have like a quick start guide or something. Yep. Like ones that just let you open the box and start playing.
Yeah, and then as you come up on something, it's like, all right, now we can look this up and figure out what it is.
Right, right.
It's like, it gets you playing as soon as you open it, like you could start playing. Because a lot of these games are so complicated that without something like that, you can sit there for an hour, hour and a half trying to figure shit out.
Yeah, and the only time I'm super okay with it is when it's like a mystery role game where it's like, you then can't stop the game, like, oh, what can I do now if I'm evil? Because it kind of give away the game.
Yeah.
So that stuff I'm fine with. But other games where it's just like, okay, so you're going to have to do this. And then I'm like, okay, we'll figure this out once it comes up. Because the best way to learn for me is to play.
Yeah, yeah. Same for me. But I'd say, compared to, you know, I'm not a board game expert or anything, but compared to a lot of stuff, Splendor seems to me like, it might sound kind of complicated how we're explaining it and shit, but like, it's, like I said, like within like 5 to 10 minutes of playing it, you're going to totally get like how to play it. You know what I mean?
Actually, it seems like I can envision how it's played.
Yeah,
It seems like something just about anybody could sit down and play.
Yeah.
So.
And That's exactly.
I think it's like simplicity is what makes it like one of my favorite board. Like it's probably my favorite board game right now for sure. Like, and it has been for like 2 years.
It was at my library. I didn't know libraries actually gave out a board game. We were there for passport reasons, but as we were leaving, I was like, let me see what's going on in here, and walk by, and like, there's a video game section, which like, I know that's something I've known for a while, but then there was like this whole board game section. They didn't have a lot, but one of them was Splendor. So
I'd say check it out, but I'd also say it's like a guaranteed buy. Also, just buy it for $30. It's totally worth
it. Yeah, that seems like something that my family could play. And how many players is it?
2 to 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes it rough. There's 6 of us. So
that is part of the problem with some board games. And that's something that, like, I play this at work because some folks at work are some kind of like a board game group every Friday. Mm-hmm. And it was just the 4 of us, so that works. And then the next week it was 5 people, so we had to try a different board game. And then tomorrow we're going to have to find something because they want to invite more people. And it's like, at some point you do hit a limit where it is. It's very hard to find board games that balance it well, because there are board games where it's like, oh, it's like for 2 to 8 players. Like, is it fun with 2 players? Or do you actually need all 8? And a lot of co-op games
like
that.
Yeah, you need the amount of people. Let's see. Tony, do you want to take next here? You want to grab one off your list?
So I have... I was saying this before the show. I was going to hide the number of board games I actually own. I have like 80 board games.
That is a lot of board games.
It's kind of a thing.
A problem, yes.
It is a problem. So one of my first board games that I ever got was Axis and Allies, which I think I got for my birthday in like 4th grade. And I remember the first time I ever skipped school was so that I could stay home the day after my birthday and play Axis and Allies. It's a lot like Risk. It takes a lot of those concepts and just puts them in the historical setting of World War II. It's pretty simple to get into conceptually. There's a lot of like complication in terms of like different units and what they can do. Whereas in Risk, you're kind of just attacking the territory next to you with the number of armies that you have. Now you have like, in Axis and Allies, you have like aircraft carriers and planes, and you have tanks that can move 2 spaces and infantry that can only move 1. And it was like this like mind-blowing gateway to the world of like historical war games.
That's where you get it from.
Yes, so that was like the kickoff point for me, where I got into all these like much more nerdier games. Pretty much anybody can play Axis and Allies, though. The concept's pretty simple. Like, you move your men into a territory next to you. You roll a die for each one of your units. If you roll low enough, you destroy the enemy unit. And there's like, each territory gives you like money for production, and you build units, and you know, you basically try to win World War II. I think one of the more interesting things about it is most war games are for 2 players, and this one can be up to 5, even though there are 2 sides. So I've played many times with large groups of people.
So how does that work? Do you take on like the role of a different country, or?
So there's 5 quote unquote countries in the game. So one person is Germany, one person is Japan, and then there's a Russia player, a UK player, and then the United States.
Okay.
It actually starts in World War II in 1942, where a lot of the potential other players have already been eliminated. So, because there'll be a lot of war games that'll start off with, like, there'll be certain countries that are neutral and not at war or whatever, but Axis and Allies kind of starts off with, like, a full-blown, let's get to it, everybody's fighting everybody.
Nice, that sounds fun. I don't think I've seen that one. I've heard of it before. I don't think I've ever actually seen it, though.
So when I got it in 3rd grade, it came in this huge box that was probably, like, 2 feet long and 1 foot across. And it like the map is huge. It was like 4 feet long and once you got it all opened up and everybody had like a place card. The game was massive. Like it took up so much space. The version I have now is like the pared down version that can actually fit into places. but the map is still really big. Like it's an investment. But...
They've done a good job with new board games where they cut them in a way that they can get big boards down into smaller boxes.
Right.
Those boxes are still huge though.
They're big, but they're not 2 feet across. And,
yeah.
They're not a suitcase.
Like I'm pretty sure I had to throw it away because it was just too big and it kept like getting broken because people would step on it and whatever.
I was going to ask, where do you store 80 some odd board games?
Closets, bookshelves.
Everywhere.
Right, everywhere.
any room you go in and
basically board game shelves.
I have a board game bookcase in my bedroom. I have some other board games just like hanging out in the living room. And then my kid's closet is also full of board games.
Now, do you buy them different types of board games, or do you, it's like, you folks are going to earn this board game with me?
So I normally keep most of my war games to myself. They're largely super complicated, so it's really hard to get somebody else into it. Like, if you're inviting somebody over to play a board game, you want to be able to explain the game in 5 minutes. And I have games that have, like, rule books that, like, for... This wasn't on my list, but Advanced Squad Leader has a rule book that's like 200 pages long. you're not going to be able to explain that to somebody. So a lot of these I end up playing like by myself. And some of the other games I'll bring up later on my list, they're kind of designed to be played by themselves. Like they have rules that make it really easy to play that way.
For Axis and Allies, like what's the average play length? Like what does a session take?
I can get through a full game in 2 hours. It really depends on how good your opponents are. I'm pretty relentless in board games, so I can, blitz through somebody pretty quick.
Right.
But if you have a bunch of really competent players, the game could go on for a while. Because the game goes on till one side loses all of their capitals.
Okay.
And some of them are really close together. Like, Berlin is not all that far from London. But conquering the United States is a lot of work because you have to cross an ocean to get there.
So if we get pulled off the air next week, you know why?
You talking about like a 200 page rule book. I remember a friend of mine, he invited me, and I did not go, but he invited me over to play a game called Twilight Imperium.
Oh yeah.
He showed me what the board is. It's like takes over his dining room. It's evidently like, that's like a weekend game. Like you need to play for hours and hours on end to get through a session of that. So,
yeah. So you and Jeff were making fun of me for doing this. There's one of the other games on my list, Stonewall Jackson's Way 2, is a Civil War game. So it takes you through some of the campaigns in Virginia in late 1862. And I stayed home from work and was playing it by myself and like posting the pictures of me playing to my Twitter feed.
Yeah. but you did say that these games, some of the games you have are position so that you can play by yourself. Like that's not something I've really ever come across. Most of the games I've played are you need at least two or three people.
So what you need is like a really strong element of randomness. So in Stonewall Jackson's Way, for instance, turns are determined like at you roll two die. If the Union die is higher, it's the Union's turn. Otherwise, it's the Confederate's turn. So you never know who's actually going to move.
Right.
Which means that you can be making like the decisions for one side without having to take the other side into account at all. And then the next turn, all right, whose turn is it? Oh, it's the Confederates again, and you keep going. Or it's the Union now, and you kind of like turn it around and go the other way. It makes it like... If you were trying to like play simultaneously, or the decisions that you were making would directly impact what happened on the other player's turn, that would be harder.
But okay.
The higher the element of randomness, the easier it is to do. Easier to
play by yourself. Jeff, before we move on to another game, how long does a session of Splendor take?
Like a half hour or less.
Okay. Short game.
Yeah, I'd say usually about a half hour.
Yeah. Earl, do you want to go, or you want me to take one?
I can do one. Okay. This is a mixture. Out of the old board games I was into, I mean, I'm still into them. It's still fun. It's like you kind of grow up on like the party games with your friends and stuff, eh, Dad?
Mm-hmm.
But within the last year or so, I've gotten into more complicated ones. So this one, not really that complicated. And it's more of a party game, but it's a co-op game that I just found fascinating. It's called Hanabi. I'm hoping that's how it's pronounced. And the reason I find this one fascinating is it's a co-op game where you're trying, it's essentially reverse, it's giant solitaire. In a way, in that you're trying to build up a 5 decks from 1 to 5 as a team. The one thing is you don't know what your cards are, but all your other teammates do. So essentially, you hold your hand up backwards away from you. And I will say that was the weirdest thing to get used to. It's not really your cards. Yes. But it's
like holding the card on your forehead. I'm not looking at it.
Yeah, it's essentially kind of like that. And so you go around the table, and you have essentially you're trying to get this within a certain number of turns, which is when the deck runs out or before you blow up. So you go around the table, and like your teammates can tell you, like, oh, you have 3 5 cards in your hand, or you have 3 red cards in your hand, or something like that. And they have to point out each and every one that's in your hand, so you can't just be like, oh, this is a red card. So you have to be like, this is red, this is red, this is red. The assumption then being that either it's like a red 1, a red 2, a red 3, or something like that, but you don't necessarily know the order. And then you have to kind of, once you get that information, you go around and then you can use it, but you don't necessarily know, again, like if your teammate tells you, like, okay, these cards are 1, you don't necessarily know which one to play and which one's going to be a waste. If you play a card that's correct, it's like solitaire, it goes on, you put a 1, you put a 2, you put a 3, until you get 5. If it's wrong, you screw it up and you blow up. I think you get 3 or 4 opportunities to not screw up as a team. And then again, each time you give somebody a hint, you use up time. You start off with 10 and you can buy it back by discarding a card. The downside to discarding a card, though, is that you might end up screwing up something that you did on the road. Like, for example, every deck ends with a 5. There's only 1 5 per color in the deck. So if you throw away a 5, that thing is skunked. You can't finish that row.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, it goes around until you either run out of cards or you somehow finish it. And then once you kind of finish it, it is based off the number of points. So the maximum points you can get is 25, 5 decks of 5 cards each. And then, you know, like it's not supposed to be so much cross-talking. The people I play with were kind of cheating. I mean, I'm not going to hold them to that. But yeah, because it's like, again...
Cheaters.
Like, because, yeah, like, you know, somebody tells you something, but somebody could tell you something. Like, we play with 5 people, somebody could tell you something, and then you have to wait until 4 of the people go before you can use that information. So you have to remember, like, oh, yes, the person said that this card is a 5, or this card is a 3. But at the same time, they could tell you that information, and somebody else at the table could have done something that would have screwed up the move they were trying to set up for you. And we had one example where one of our teammates had 3s, and I pointed out to him that he had 2 3s in his hand, which would have been more great. He had a 50-50 chance of getting it right. The next person played the 3 that diminished his chance to 0. And it's like, how do we then convey the fact that you have 3s in your hand that are worth nothing to us? And... so again, we can't necessarily we couldn't tell him this again. So again, like I said, there was some cheating. So it was a cross table. So we're trying to explain the math. It's like, okay, you were told that you have 2 3s, which meant that you had a 50-50 shot. But that you went around the full table, your odds may have changed since then. And they took it to mean the other thing, where it's like, oh, it's 3s more valuable now. It's like, no,
it means that.
Because really, you go from, it's either 100%, 50%, or 0%. There's not that many odds of two cards. So, yeah, it's stuff like that, and I think it's just fun because, again, it's a sense of communication, and it's just, like, trusting other people, and even trusting them and knowing this information, you're still kind of like, I have to make sure I'm making the right decision and not screwing them up. So, yeah, it's really fun, it's really simple, and I think the set game itself is only, like, $10.
Yeah, I just looked it up on Amazon. It's actually on sale for $6.97 right now, so... And what takes about 20-30 minutes.
Yeah, it's a really simple game. You earn it in no time.
Nice, that sounds fun. Let's see. All right, so I guess we'll talk about this one because Jeff tried. We talked about it at the end of last week. We were all going to try and play it together. Jeff is the only one that played it because it's evidently a single player.
Let's have him explain it.
But yeah, Ticket to Ride. Jeff, how'd that video game experience go?
It sucked because I left here all excited last week. Like, as soon as we were done, I like went to go download it, and I was gonna, you know, like figure out how to play the game so I'd be ready to go as soon as you guys were. And I downloaded it, and you know, the opening screen looks really cheap, and I'm like, what? There's two options on the screen. It's tutorial and solo. That's it.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, this thing, thank God it was on Game Pass and free and everything. It should be, like, illegal what this company did. Like...
Well, clearly they had to give their game to people for free, so it didn't work out for them.
I mean, they were charging like $15-$20 though, which is insane for what this is. Like, it's. I mean, I said, they should be a class action lawsuit.
Well, and on top of that is, so like you get, I think you get the U.S. map with the game, but then they're charging for each of the expansions. So like Europe, U.K. That's absolutely and like insane. The U.K. Like if you buy the actual. Like if you buy the board game version of the UK, it comes with the Pennsylvania map, but this, they're two separate sales.
Oh no, no.
which is just kind of hysterical. But, they would try to do that. Yeah, that's a shame because, the board game itself is actually a ton of fun. So, it's a map. Depending upon which version you're playing, the version we play is the Europe version, and then we have a couple expansion maps. But there's also like a U.S. map, and we just got a world map actually as well that has trains and boats. But go ahead, Earl.
No, I was gonna say I think they just did a time based one too. It's like 1917.
Yeah, there's a 1917 expansion. That uses the America map, and then it adds like different objectives and stuff. So basic premise is you have the map, and you will get a hand of five cards that are different colors, and you will get a hand of missions to select, and those missions are you're trying to create routes from cities to cities. So let's say you need to go from Berlin to Paris. That's one of your missions. It's worth X amount of points. And what you need to do is get enough of the cards that match the routes. So it could be three black cards. Like it'll be a route of black trains and a route of green trains. You need to get three black trains to match the route, and then enough green trains to match the other route. And then you basically buy that route and put your trains down, and that's yours, and you get the points for it. And then each turn goes around where you're picking up these resource cards, which are the ones where you buy the routes, or you are building or getting new missions if that's what you want to do. And each other player is doing the same. So they're trying to complete their missions or basically try and screw you over by blocking you. Like, oh, I know that, you know, Jeff is trying to go from Moscow to Madrid. Like, that seems to be what his path is here. He's probably running a mission that's worth a large amount of points. And if you don't complete the mission at the end of the game, you lose those points. So,
oh no.
You could be going for a 20-point route, and if you don't complete it, you lose 20 points instead of gaining it. So you might be like, oh, now I'm gonna block you off here, and now Jeff has to go like roundabout to get to Madrid as opposed to like a direct route. And when you add more and more people, it gets more and more chaotic. So
how many people is it?
Depending upon which map you're playing, it's 2 to 5 people. So the world map, which is a gigantic, it's shipping lanes and trains throughout the world. It is it's also 5 players, but there is a Nordic version that is Norway, Finland, and Sweden. That is that's only 3 up to 3 players. And there's different expansions for it. So the UK expansion does some weird things, but on the flip side of that board is a Pennsylvania map, and that there are no missions. There are no. It's not the normal version of the game. Instead, every time you build a route, you are then buying stock in one of the rails in one of the rail companies. So like Reading Railroad or B&O Railroad, you're buying stock into them. So then at the end, you're trying to, like, whoever has the most stock gets the points for that company. And that's actually how you win in that one. So each of the different versions has a slightly different rule set.
That one sounds a little fresh. More complicated.
It is. That one confuses my daughter, my youngest daughter. Because it's not just, oh, I need to go from point A to point B. It's also, now I need to know that I'm trying to buy all the Reading Railroad ones. I'm trying to build the routes that Reading is on, as opposed to just trying to go from Pittsburgh to Erie or whatever. But they're fun. Like they all have like different rule sets, and each of them are kind of fun to play. It sucks that that video game version of it is terrible, though.
Yeah, it did. I mean, like, I played the tutorial and I got like kind of the gist of it, and I'm like, oh, this seems like it has some potential and stuff. Like, the tutorial doesn't even explain that like, you could like block other players, and it didn't get into any of that. It was just like,
because there's no way you're like. I mean, I guess you're playing against four other AI people.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't gonna. I mean, it's beyond the fact that there's no multiplayer. Like, the game is terrible. Like, the way
it's set up.
Like, the game itself, I could tell. Oh yeah, this is probably a cool board game, but like, yeah,
it doesn't work well.
No.
What's funny is Epic. They give away free games each week. Next week, that is. It's one of their free games. They're giving away 3. I think they're all from that same company, though.
Yeah, and it's that it's Ticket, well. It's Ticket to Ride is Pandemic, and it's the one I can never pronounce, but I actually have it on 360 as well.
Carcassonne.
Carcassonne. Yes. Oh, I have that game. That game is a lot of fun too.
Yes. Yeah, I think they're, to say are they all from the same company, Earl?
Yeah.
I heard that Pandemic version, that Pandemic game is bad, too.
I feel like there's certain board games that don't really translate well to digital space because of, you know, a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But I was also going to say the funny thing with Ticket to Ride is, because when Jeff said this, I was like, no, I remember this having multiplayer.
You played the phone version, right?
Well, apparently the 360 version
has multiplayer. The 360 version does have multiplayer, yeah.
The and Xbox there, One port does not.
There is a mobile version of it as well that has multiplayer that I play with my wife. Like, they're turn-based games, so you take your turn and it'll alert her that it's now her turn and she can go, and you don't have to be sitting down there playing it that way. It's so weird that it's broken that way, though.
It is such a weird concept that it's like, we're going to port this to the Xbox and we should take away the multiplayer because nobody was using that. It's like, what?
Take away the part that makes board games fun.
Broke the game. Like,
like what you said that, and I was like, he can't be right. Maybe he missed something. I googled him. I'm like, okay, I'm just not going to download this because it's sort of no purpose. It's
not worth it. I'm glad Jeff checked it out for us right immediately after. Yeah,
taking one from the team.
And I saw that Jeff was getting into it with somebody that was like, they were like, yeah, this fucking company is a scam. Like, because I guess they had downloaded another one of their games that was broken. So.
Yeah, I was like searching, you know, after a couple minutes staring at like my screen in disbelief, I like started searching on Twitter, like Ticket to Ride Xbox, you know, Ticket to Ride Xbox, no multiplayer. I was just like seeing not a lot of people are playing this. It might blow your mind, but
I wonder why.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's just, you know, it's a board game. It should not be hard to fuck up on multiplayer, but it's just like, cut to some different camera angles, add some music, like make it feel exciting. You know what I mean? Like, this is just like a static board on your screen and this like looping horrible music that just goes, you know, it's like a 10 second loop that just goes constantly. You know what I mean? Like,
it's amazing.
Just as a quick aside, as Jeff mentioned that it's a wonder that like more companies haven't really tried to copy the Mario Party model and doing like an actual video. Like we've had, like I think Ubisoft did like a Hasbro collection that was also broken pretty badass gen. But yeah, like we've had Mario Party, we had Fusion Frenzy, there was Sonic did something, I forget what it was called. Sonic Shuffle. But it's like, yeah, I mean, especially in this recent age, board games have kind of had a huge renaissance, which is why you see everybody and their mother doing one. Kickstarter's all over the place for them, which we'll get to in a second. But like you were talking about, like having this like this board game that's kind of dead and on the IV, and Carson, whatever.
Carcassonne.
Carcassonne. I had that on the Xbox 360, and it's a fun game. But to your point, it doesn't really have any razzle dazzle. It's just kind of like rotate your piece, put it down, and that's your turn. There's like nothing to it. It's like a flat surface that, and again, it makes sense but it's like, yeah, there's no real pizzazz to this.
Yeah, you could add some production to it, make it a little more fun. Make the trains move or something.
Yeah. I mean,
show like me an actual train and not like a static image.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've played versions of Monopoly like on console that, you know, have way more style and just felt like not like a cheap broken thing like this, you know, like.
Oh yeah, like, I remember playing a like Star Wars Monopoly back on the PC like years ago, and like the pieces were animated and yeah. They had like little cutscenes, like
you'd see like things dancing around on the screen.
Yeah, like there's ways to make a board game entertaining for a TV presentation.
And Ticket to Ride does none of them. And no. You can't even, like, you can't play with someone in the same room. What is the point of a fucking game like that if you can't play people?
Yeah, like you, if you can't even play, like, if, like, you know, your girlfriend's there with you and you two can't even play, what's the point? Because, like, at that point, you might as well just go and get the fucking board game and put it on your dining room table.
Very disappointed.
Jeff, tell us about another one of yours.
Well, keeping with co-op theme, I think Earl, your last game was, what was the name of your last game, Earl?
Hanabi? Yes.
Okay. But keeping with the co-op theme, one of the games I haven't enjoyed is called Forbidden Island, which is a 2-4 player co-op game where you and like other players have to like work together to move around this island and collect 4 treasures before like the island sinks into the water and dies. Has anyone played this?
No. So this is a co-op game?
Yeah.
I like co-op games.
Yeah, it's very fun. Like, because I don't play a lot of board games. I don't have a lot of board games, but it's one of the only ones I can think of that you do that, so it's unique to me. And yeah, it's fun, like, working together, trying to, like, strategize your next move. Basically, the island is made up of a bunch of cards you lay out, so the island layout will be different every time. And then you guys are drawing cards, and the cards you draw will match one of the cards on the island, and then you flip that card over if you pull that card. If you pull that same card twice, that piece goes away, and so, like, that piece of the island falls off, and it makes it harder for you to get around. Some of the parts of the island, you know, have the treasure on it. So if you lose that piece of the island, your game is over. You know, you have to get the four treasures. Once you get the four treasures, you have to make it back to, you know, one section of the island where there's a helicopter, and you guys, like, once you guys are all there, the game is over. You got to the chopper. I don't know. That's kind of basically it, but I really dig it. Me and my one friend, Eric, really dig it. My girlfriend does not like it for some reason. So it doesn't get played quite as much. I think, you know, Splendor's the most popular game all around, so it just gets the most play. But me and my friend will, like, force everyone, like, no, we're playing one quick game of Forbidden Island. And that game is also probably about a half hour.
I'm looking it up on Amazon right now. There's a bunch of like different spin-offs for it too. There's a Forbidden Desert.
Yeah.
Just same concept, I guess, where looks like the same build up, it's just a different setting. It's neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game I would easily recommend to any of you guys. Like I said, for some reason it doesn't seem as popular among my friends except for me and my one buddy, but I really dig it, and I think you guys, I don't know, I think you guys would all, like, think it's pretty cool for what it is.
Tony doesn't mind buying board games, so
no, I like
them. I'm surprised that, like, none of you have played this, because I think it's a fairly popular one too. I mean, obviously it has all those, you know, expansions and shit or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's just so many board games out there that there's ones we've never heard of.
And as much as I love board games, it's also really difficult to get your friends together for big board game night.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. So, like, which, you know, for Tony and I, it's a little bit easier. We have built-in built-in people we can make play with us. But
yes, but are they going to want to play certain games that you?
No, like when we, yeah, like. I think something like this, they probably would. There are definitely games that they'd be like, no, I don't want to play that.
Yeah, there are, like I said, there are, I think there are more what I consider like party games, more like, oh yeah, we're going to play, we're going to have fun, it's going to be goofy. If I can transition real quick, one of the games on my list is Cranium, which is a very old game. But that is a very social party game because a lot of it is just making an ass of yourself. It's you know, making stuff out of clay, perform, you know, acting out or singing a song, spelling words backwards in turns. It's a bunch of random tasks. It's like, it's honestly like an old, like, 90s game show or something like that. But you get a bunch of people together, and it's a game that you don't have to explain very, because, I mean, every explanation is pretty much the card you pull. You just know that if you land on this card's space, you have to take out one of those cards, and you can't move on until your team completes that task or a task in that realm. And it's like you put some drinks in it, and it becomes a real party. So it's, but yeah, it's like one of those games. Like there's no effort set up. There's no half an hour explanation. There's no going over the rules. It's just like, yeah, you did this or you didn't do it. You move on, and everybody's on equal footing. There's no like, I mean, there are some people, like, I hate some of my friends. I have friends who are just, like, artists, so there's, like, games where you have to draw blind, and they'll still draw blind, and it still comes out better than anything I draw with my eyes open. and I'm just, like, anytime there's an art challenge, I just tell my friends we might as well just give up now, because I'm a terrible artist. I don't mind making a fool of myself. There's certain stuff I'm not good at it. I just don't like to share that with the world. Like,
I thought you were perfect in every way, or what?
In every single, but yeah, a few years ago, there's a cell phone game that had, like, you know, they've converted a lot of popular older board games into cell phone games like Scrabble's Word with Friends and stuff like that. And they had Drawing with Friends, which is essentially Pictionary.
Okay.
That was never good for me because my friends could never guess what I was drawing. And then you'd figure it out after the work fact and they're like, yeah, I have no idea what you were talking about. And I'm just like, you know what, I'm gonna go on this whole art thing. But I think those games are just there's always standbys at Monopoly and stuff like that. People hate Monopoly, but they will always play it.
I won't play it. I don't love Monopoly.
Yeah, but
I
don't mind playing Monopoly, but my wife hates it, so we never play.
Monopoly is the Bud Light of board games. It's kind
maybe
of
that's
like,
why I won't play it.
Yeah,
disgusting. It's a waste.
I mean, like, when people say board games, that's the one they know. And I mean, there's so many different versions of Monopoly. But it's like one of those board games. Like, once you actually start playing other board games, it's like, why did I ever play this? Because it has like all of the elements you really dislike in board games. It's random chance. It benefits people who go first sometimes. Like, there's no real strategy to it.
It takes too long.
Yeah. It takes way too long.
It always ends in a fight over what the taxes are or something.
And there's house rules. Like, everybody plays it. Like, there's rules, but everybody plays it differently.
Here we don't use that rule. Like, what do you? Yeah. But it's a rule. Like,
yeah,
I'm looking in the rule book. It's right there.
Like, I make Monopoly has rules. I mean, but yeah, it's like, oh no, you can't leave jail until you get out of jail free card, or you have to roll like double sixes again. And it's like, who makes up this stuff?
Right.
Yeah, we don't play Monopoly anymore. I don't even know if we own Monopoly anymore.
I don't own Monopoly. Like, one of the games I don't own. The only one.
I feel like I got it. Sure I do. I have it on Xbox One, and it actually has a sped up version that only takes like, I think it's like a half hour.
That's just to get going. I do want to get one of those like knockoff versions. Like, they have like, the Monopoly Gamer Edition, which is like Sonic the Hedgehog, and they I think they have, what is it now, Monopoly Jail or something like that. And I'm like, I kind of want to get one of those, but yeah, I am on the realm of like, let's get these really expensive board games with miniature figures. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, Tony, you got a.
I've got an expensive board game with miniature figures.
Yeah?
Is it Gloomhaven?
Yeah. That was what I was going to say, but Legends of Andor is the game I was going to bring up. So my older son is obsessed with Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with Dungeons & Dragons is getting prepared is a lot of work, especially for me, because I'm always the dungeon master, so I have to, like, put the map together and get all like the stuff written up, and you know, and then actually playing is always like I have to kind of perform, and you know, I'm in the mood to do that sometimes, but other times I'm like, I'd like the game to take care of this. I'd also like to actually play. That would be fun for me. So the cool thing about Legend of Andor is it's kind of a Dungeons and Dragons-esque experience, except that the game itself like runs itself. So there's you start off the adventure by putting out like chapter cards, and as you get to each card, an event will happen in the game, like monsters will attack the kingdom, or the mill burns down, or whatever, and that'll make a bunch of stuff happen on the map. And then everybody is playing like as a character in the game world, kind of like you would in a Dungeons & Dragons game. Like, one person is an archer, and one person is a mage, and one person is a dwarf. And so you kind of get that whole Dungeons & Dragons thing going on. And then the game itself, like, determines how the monsters and stuff move around in the map. And it's really simple, as opposed to Dungeons & Dragons, which is actually
very complicated.
I mean, it can be simple, but yeah.
This is like, I roll a die, and the monster rolls a die,
And if my die is higher, I win. It's kind of like...
Not like, oh, you roll the die, you hit. Now you have to roll a die to see what type of damage you do.
Exactly. This... I took off his left pauldron with acid. Yeah. No, this game is like, okay, I rolled a 6 and they rolled a 4, so they lost 2 hit points. Now they're down to 0 and they're dead. So that's kind of better too. So if you're looking for like people who don't want the complexity of Dungeons and Dragons, plus not having to like put all the stuff together and like, you know, make art for the world, think of a backstory and a narrative, like it does all that for you. The game itself, I think, comes with like 5 adventures, and then there's a bunch of like expansions you can buy to keep building on what you have. And you know, it's moving like, you know, miniatures around on a map, fighting monsters. It's a lot of fun, and it's cooperative. That's the other thing. I like the fact that everybody can play on the same side, up to 4 players.
Oh, nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Is there any persistence to it, Tony?
The missions themselves like tell a story when you put them together, mm-hmm. but your character doesn't carry over their stats from one game to another. But that kind of like RPG element of building your character up does occur within each play session. So your character does like gain, I forget what they call it, but there's like willpower, which is like your ability to stay in a fight, mm-hmm. and there's strength, which is relates to I can't remember how you do damage or something, and you can build those up over time. So
similar to that, although maybe a little more Dungeons and Dragons-y, is Descent, Journey in the Dark, or there's a Star Wars version of it called Imperial Assault. Kind of similar to what Tony was saying, it's like there's like a map, like the world is already pre-built, and there are actual chapter kind of adventure guides. So it'll tell whoever's running the game. So there is still a dungeon master type person, but they control all the enemies on the board. Where there's a team of like 3 or 4 heroes that are going through and fighting against this one. So think like video game wise, what was that? What's that 4-on-1 game that came out?
Oh,
Evolve.
Yeah,
like
Evolve. Dead
by Daylight.
Yeah, Dead by Daylight or Friday the 13th, where.
Yeah,
one person is the enemy. In this case, multiple enemies, because they're kind of the other side of everything, and then a team of heroes is going against them. So the guidebook that you put together, like, will tell you, oh, you got to take these pieces, and it builds like a unique map, like nice artwork, and they're interlocking pieces, so. Like you could have like, oh, piece 9A goes to for this one goes to 16 and 26. And then for a different one, it could be 9A goes to 12, and it creates a different map because they connect like a puzzle. So it gives you this kind of top down view of the world. And then the DM type person, the AI, I guess, in this case would be they would have like the enemies on the map, and unlike the one that the Legends of Andor that Tony was just saying, there is persistence though. So your character carries over from session to session as you go through the different adventures.
That's cool.
So you'll level up your character, and it's not deep. Like it's not like it's not like D&D exactly, like where, you know, I'm gonna increase my charisma or something like that. Like it's very rudimentary, but you will get more powerful as you go on, and that allows you to fight against more powerful enemies. And they come with these cool, small little figures some people paint. the versions I have always played have been like the generic plastic color that it comes, but there are people that do some really cool artwork with it. And they're just like with Legends of Andor, there's tons of different expansions to this. The issue with this one though is where Legends of Andor looks like it's like $35 right now. Descent is like 62, and then each of the expansions like $40 a piece.
Oh god.
So it gets really expensive really quickly. Like I have the one Star Wars version, and my friend has he has the Descent version and then a couple other the expansions. It gets expensive. that's from Fantasy Flight Games. Like they have made DLC for board games, basically.
Yeah, they have.
And tons of it too, because there's some other games that I play from them that's basically like you buy the base game, and then to build out on it, you buy other pieces that you can add to your game. But yeah, it's a cool way of playing D&D without having to get into the, you know, you have to create the world and do all that stuff yourself.
I'm all for lazy D&D. Like, D&D is fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Like, I want to play, and like, it's always like, oh, well, Chris will run the match. Like, I don't want to.
I want to play too.
And then if I don't, then we don't play because right. Nobody else wants to do it. And
right. There's also like, oh, daddy, I beat you there. Beat me? Like, I could kill all of you whenever I want to.
Right. You know, I could do whatever I want. I am God. and like that, the key to being a good DM is to make it just challenging enough that the heroes move on. Like, you don't want to defeat them because then the game's over.
That's right.
Like, you're persistently losing.
You're trying to lose, like, in horrific. It's like losing in the final seconds every battle. Yeah. That's great. Great.
You're basically. Three-pointer
at the buzzer again. I don't know how this keeps happening.
You're, who are the guys that play the Globetrotters all the time?
Oh, the Washington Generals.
Yeah, they lose every single time. Let's each go through one more, and then we'll call it a night. Jeff, tell us about this Sagrada game.
Sagrada,
sure.
Okay, so
is it named after that church?
Yeah, it is actually. It's a game I bought. Just off the cover, because the cover looked so cool. Like, I literally knew nothing about it. But I looked at the cover, and I turned it over, and I saw it was a game where you played with a bag of fucking dice, of like 60 dice or some shit. I was like, hell yeah. So I fucking bought it. And so the way the game works is it's another 2 to 4 player game, I think. I don't know. Yep. You'll have more than that. I'm not sure.
Two to four players, there's a five and six player expansion.
Okay. And everyone has their own individual, like, game board. So almost picture, like, bingo, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But it's like a stained glass window you're trying to fill out. And you'll pull a bunch of dice from the bag, basically two for each player. And you go around as players picking dice. And you're trying to fill out your window with the dice, different colored dice. And, you know, there's, like, conditions to it. Like, you can't place two numbers next to each other. You can't place two of the same color dice next to each other. There will be things on your board, like, oh, in this square, you can only put a 3, you know, stuff like that. And so, yeah, you're just going around, taking turns, trying to fill out your board. I think it's like 10 turns long, and at the end of that, your stained glass window should be filled out with dice, or you'll be missing a couple spaces because you couldn't, you know, you needed a 3, and you guys never drew a 3 with the dice, so you know there's a spot open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, you kind of count up your points, all sorts of different things. Like there might be a bonus for having a row of 5 different colors, or, you know, not repeating the same number in a row. And everyone is like assigned, let's say you're assigned purple at the beginning. At the end of the game, you count the value on all the purple dice that you have. So, you know, like you count up, you know, this one's 6, this one's 3, whatever. That adds to your score. Whoever has the highest score at the end of the 10 rounds is the winner. It's a little more complicated than, like, say, Splendor, but it's not super hard or anything. And I feel like it's been pretty popular among us. Like, you know, we don't always play Splendor now. Sometimes it's actually lately it has been like, let's play Sagrada again, you know.
Nice.
So, yeah, it worked out for a blind buy. I would recommend it to you guys for sure.
It seems pretty cool. Rolling dice is always fun.
Plus just having like a big ass bag full. I mean, the only thing is like, I was disappointed when I first opened the game because the dice are so tiny. I thought I expected like normal sized dice, like a big bag of like fucking 60 dice or whatever the hell.
Yeah, that's small. On Amazon, great game, but the dice are really small. My older parents have a really hard time picking up and placing the dice.
It can be harder to like set it down as your board's filling out, like to get it into the square, and not like accidentally turn it or knock over one of your other dice. Like, so yeah, I could definitely see that.
Earl, you got another one you want to talk about?
Sure. We have not talked about this genre much, I don't think, but it's super popular these days. It's the Werewolf Mafia-esque game, the one where within your group there is sometimes a known, sometimes an unknown number of enemies working against a common interest.
Okay.
And part of the appeal is trying to figure out who they are while also working together and having them con their ways through. And one of my favorite movies of all time is The Thing. So there is a Thing board game, but this is actually not it. This is called, I believe, Panic Station.
Okay.
I'm just trying to make sure I get the name, which is why I'm doing this intro. Yes, it's called Panic Station, and it is essentially like The Thing, where you are in kind of a research station, and an infection has broken out, and one of the people in your group of up to, I want to say, 8 people is infected, and you don't know who it is. And throughout the course of the game, you're kind of working on ways to defeat this enemy. So there's different win conditions, but that enemy is also trying to work towards one, unleashing more creatures within this place, but also infecting other people to their cause. So I don't know how many games you've played, you folks have played, not necessarily that part, but how the actual board is structured is that you start off with like one long hallway, and as you go through the game, you pick up tiles and then you place them. So the map is always slightly different because it's based on which way the characters are moving and which ways you're trying to set up rooms. And it has some basic guidelines. Like you can't put like the rooms have to connect. You can't just put like a room that doesn't have a door that connects to a door from a previous room or anything like that. But outside of that, pretty much it's free for all. As long as you can connect them, you can kind of do it, which means there are some doors, you know, there's some ways where you might get a door that goes in, but there's nothing that goes out. Or you might get one that has like a door, but the door has a lock and you have to figure out to get a key or a way to unlock that door, the second door separately. Then there are special rooms like a computer app, which allows you, if you're in the computer app, you can do certain special tasks. You can set up like cameras. You can open all the emergency doors and stuff like that. So yeah, you're working towards one objective as a team. You can destroy the hive. You can get enough gas canisters to set the research facility on fire. You can, you know, there's ways to take out enemies because random like enemies will spawn on the map and having to deal with them. But and at the start of the game, everybody's on the same side. Nobody's corrupted. Within like the first I think the first turn, actually, somebody ends up getting corrupted. The cards mixed into the pile. I think depending on your party size, it's one person by default. I think two people if it's up to eight people. And how you corrupt other people is, like, throughout the course of the game, as you move throughout this facility, you can, if you go into a room with somebody else, if you go into the space that somebody else is already in, you have to trade cards, and you have, I think by default, you start with like four or five cards. So by default, you could trade, you know, like if you want to trade a gas canister for a gas canister, or if you want to, like if you have like a walkie-talkie, you can give that to another person. But the person who is the creature, the thing, whatever you want to call it, can give them corrupted blood. And if they don't give you a gas canister, which will burn off the blood, they will get corrupted. And it can't tell anybody. But now you two are working together. And it continues this way until, so your wins thing is when the amount of creatures outnumbers the amount of survivors, you win. Or if you somehow take them all out. So it's that paranoia element because again, you know, it's like one of those things where it's like, I could say, like, I could do an exchange with somebody and just accuse them of trying to corrupt me. Just to sow paranoia within the group. Even if that wasn't the case. So it's really fun in that regard. I do love those. There's certain people who don't like those games because they don't like the element of not trusting their friends or having an eye to people. And I'm one of those people. I actually enjoy the games, but I don't dislike eye to people. I don't do it well. So whenever I'm the creature, I was just like, oh, I'm going to help the team anyhow. And like we finished the game, they're like, oh, why didn't you try anything? I'm like, because you folks suspected me, and there was never an opportunity, but they like, you should have tried anyhow. I'm like, when? Because then it just gives up the game, but you know, I ended up losing anyhow. But no, I think those games are really fun, and like I said, there's a ton of them. There's Mafia, there's Werewolf. We play a game called Bang, which is very similar. There's Secret Hitler.
I've heard of that one before.
Yeah. So I like this one because there's a lot of, you know, there's a bit more systems in place. I like the element of kind of building the map in real time and working together in that regard. I like the fact that, again, it is a co-op experience, but at some point, somebody is not who they seem. And like I said, The Thing is just one of my absolutely favorite movies, and this really captures the spirit of that. Almost to a point where I'm not surprised they haven't gotten sued yet, because, like I said, like you're essentially, you know, you're setting the things on fire. There's ways to actually, you could scan people to actually test their blood to see if they're corrupted or not. Again, if you've seen The Thing, a lot of this stuff is right out of that movie.
It sounds like a lot like a game that I own but have not played called Betrayal at House on the Hill. Has anyone played that one?
I bought that recently because it was on sale on Amazon. I have not played it, but that is the difference with that one, though, is that you actually do know who the person is.
Oh, do you?
Because how that one works is, it's the same setup. You build out, like, it's a 3-story mansion. You build out a basement, ground floor, and a second floor. But what happens is, like, you get omens, and omens are like special abilities or curses and stuff like that. And you can keep going, you can get as many omens as you possibly can. The thing is, whenever somebody gets an omen, they have to roll the die and get more than the number of omens. Like, if there's two omens, you have to roll 6 die, and you have to get more than 2, which is easy. But once you start getting up to like 7, 8, 9, 10, that becomes more difficult. And then once you roll a certain, like, once you roll underneath it, it's triggered the omen. So it could be at the start of the game, it could be late in the game. Once that's triggered, then you go into a rule book, and then there's different sceneries that play out. And then, so there's two books. There's a book that the players have, and then the book where the person has. And then the person, the enemy will have more information, especially they will have their own objective. And then the team has their own objective. But you know who that enemy is. You just don't necessarily know what their agenda is.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so, like, I've owned it for over a year. We went to, like, go play it one night, and then, like, we're, like, reading the rules and shit, and we're like, oh, man, this is way more fucking in-depth than, like, Splendor. And we're drinking beers and shit, and we're just like, Splendor. And, yeah, never given it a chance since. Like, sounds cool, though. It sounds like a neat genre. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, I have Betrayal, and I have another game called Horrify, which is Universal Monsters. And I want to bring them to work, but the person who runs the board game thing at work does not want any of those games because it does so Descent and, you know, yeah, people don't like that. And I get it. I get it because you want it to be a frenzy game for some time, but some people really enjoy that. So yeah, I recommend Panic Station.
Okay. I looked it up on Amazon. They did not have a copy of it. That,
oh no.
It's on there, but it's for like $250. It is available on eBay though for like $25 to $40. So
that's a much better price.
Yes, then way better. Yeah. $249.99 for Panic Station.
Yeah, it gets used on eBay for $20 right now.
Yeah. So, Tony, you got another one?
I guess the last one I'd talk about is Catan. So I think Catan is probably one of the best multiplayer games I've ever played in terms of keeping everybody involved all the time. So the basic premise is you have this map of little hexagons, and each hexagon is a kind of resource, like grain or wood or stone or whatever it happens to be. And you have these little cities. They're called, you have settlements that you can actually expand into cities, but that's beside the point. So you build your settlement. You build roads along the map to build another settlement. And each turn, a player will roll the dice. And whatever number ends up on the dice will activate all of the hexagons on the map that have that particular number on them. Which means at any time, anybody during anybody's turn can get resources. Which means you're kind of always paying attention to what's going on, as opposed to like tuning out on the other player's turns. So everybody who's who has a settlement that's adjacent to that particular hexagon will get all the resource, or will get a certain number of resources based on whether they have a settlement or a full city. And then you use these resources to buy roads to expand your settlements.
Hello?
Tony? Did we lose Tony?
To cities, and then to, like, purchase development cards.
We lost you for a second.
Some of which give you victory points, some of which, you guys not hear me.
At the building of roads.
I can hear you.
Buying.
Yeah, I'm still here. Where did I stop? Okay. Yes. Yeah, so you use your resources, and you build roads, and you expand to cities, and you can buy cards, too. And these cards will actually either give you a victory point, or they'll let you do something called moving the robber around, which I'll explain in a minute. Then you can also trade these resources with the other players. So there's always these like trades going on, and you're getting resources on the other player's turn. So in terms of like player involvement, everybody at the table is always doing something, which I think is really cool. If you roll a 7, there's no like resource number that matches a 7. 7 activates the robber, which lets the player who's rolling the dice move the robber onto one of the hexagons, which means nobody can get resources from that hexagon. So you're kind of like strategically positioning the robber to like stop somebody from getting any wood from that space or whatever it happens to be. And then when you move it, you also get to steal somebody else's resource card, which, you know, who has stuff that I want, and who is getting too far ahead and needs to be like pulled down and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on there.
When you roll a 7, isn't there a rule where it's if you have over X
Everybody with more, I think it's 7 resource cards, has to give half of them away.
Yes, that thing really screws you over.
Yes, if the robber is not good. And then if you're playing like some of the expansions, like the Seafarers expansions have pirates
which can block people from building trade routes and that kind of thing. So the game also has like a bunch of expansions now too. The base game is 3 or 4 players. You can get an expansion that gets you to 5 or 6. And then there's a Seafarers expansion, which I own. There's like a Knights and Castles expansion. There's a bunch of them. But super popular game. I think it's in its 5th or 6th edition because they just keep selling out of all of them.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. And it's like easy enough that like little kids can play it, but there's a lot of strategy involved that you know, like adults, and it makes for a fun game all around.
There's a strong element of luck too. Although I will say last weekend I lost to my 9-year-old, which was, you know, humbling. But
yeah, because the board is randomized. So
yeah,
it's never the same match twice. So that makes it pretty cool.
Yeah, there are some elements where, you know, you're trying to get to those settlement spaces that border 3 resources, and like, you know, trying to get to the right ports and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's a fun game. Anybody should play Catan. That is one of those games you should just have played.
Last one I'm going to talk about is slightly less serious than Catan. It's a game called You've Got Crabs.
I do.
You split into, you need to play in teams. So it's up to 4 to 10 players. You pair off into teams. With your teammate, you come up with a signal to kind of communicate with them silently. And then what each player is trying to do is gather 4 cards that are the same. So you're trying to get 4 of a kind, but you can't do anything with those 4 cards.
Oh, no.
You need your teammate to identify that you have 4 of a kind so you can get points for them. So that's where the secret signal comes in. So you're trying to get the attention of your teammate to identify that you have 4. They yell out, "You've got crabs," and you play your cards and you get a point. However, if another team, you know, wants to jump the gun or kind of thinks that, that you might have it, they can say, "You've got crabs," and then if you do, then you lose a point. You can play it with bluffing. So it's like you're like trying to kind of throw off the other team so that they call you out.
Wow.
And then you gain points that way, or they lose points, and you're trying to keep your teammate in. There's a lot of like yelling going back and forth it becomes a loud game, but it's quite a bit of fun. The artwork on the cards is by the Oatmeal. He also did the artwork for a game Earl had written down, Exploding Kittens. It's like fun, goofy looking like crab artwork. They have like weird names like Crabrador Retriever, but it's like a picture of a dog with crab legs, or the Ab Crab, where it's a crab with abs lifting weights. It's fun, it's quick. Games take like maybe 15-20 minutes. It's just a loud, fun kind of get around. We play it with our kids, but you can play it with adults too. We've done that, and it's fun when people start drinking. And
what's it called?
You've Got Crabs.
No, what's it called?
You've Got Crabs.
Okay.
That's what it's called. it's a fun game. There's an expansion for it that comes with these plastic crab hands. I don't remember exactly how they work, but it's ridiculous. I think it's like you pick up a wild card or something, but while you have the wild card, you have to wear the crab hands.
Oh God!
It's goofy. It's a ton of fun. Maybe next time we'll talk about Exploding Kittens. Except that's another one that's it's a fun little card game put on the table. So, well, that brings we did not cover all the games here. There's plenty more for us to cover in future future version of this. Maybe Jeff will play that hill game, haunted hill game, or whatever he's got that he hasn't played in a year.
Maybe it'll motivate me to give it a shot.
Or try out some other games. I am very similar to you in that I have bought some games that are still sitting on my shelf because haven't either had the time, or you open it up and it's like, oh, these instructions are a lot. We don't have time for that right now. And
yeah,
like I have a game called Gear World that it's like a resource game, but it's just to sit down and play it just.
Much. It's too much.
Yeah. So we put everything back in the box and it's been sitting there for a year. So but yeah, we'll do this again. We obviously have plenty more to talk about.
So many board games. So many.
And I don't know. I still the release calendar is very light. So I don't know exactly what we'll be coming back with next week, but
we'll have news to talk about because this news we didn't talk about this week.
Okay, so
nothing super major, but yeah, there's stuff to talk about, and yeah, I still don't know what's coming out next week, but
yeah, nothing. we'll be able to talk about the Super Bowl too because that's going to happen.
Go Patriots! Oh no, no, yeah,
that's not happening. No.
I got to square.
Pitchers have gone fishing.
You got a square?
Yes, I do. So that'll make it somewhat interesting for me.
Yeah.
I have my own wager. I mentioned this on Twitter that whichever team wins is going to be my spring trip this year. So either going to San Francisco or Kansas City.
Ew.
I had no horse in the race, and I wanted to visit both. I'm like, yeah, it's a fun way to be invested in the game.
Oh, just go to San Francisco. Come on.
Well, Kansas City has its charms. It has barbecue with vinegar for some odd reason.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kansas City.
That is who I'm rooting for this week. But
yeah, I hope Kansas City wins. It'd be nice to see Andy Reid get one. Get the monkey off your back, Andy.
Yeah.
Giant monkey, such a big monkey.
Yeah, Chunky most of Philly is cheering for them, even though they basically ran him out of town. But things change when he's been gone away for a while. Yeah, so we will have Super Bowl. We'll have some news. We're coming up on PAX East, where I will be at the end of February. I believe Earl's going as well.
I am going.
So we'll have some stuff for there too. So there's stuff to talk about in February. We'll be back next week. Jeff, say good night.
Good night.